From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. This week, the Assembly passed a bill that would change how history gets taught. The new law would require that the contributions of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender individuals be included in social studies instruction. The bill is now on its way to Governor Brown, who's not indicated whether or not he'll sign it. In the hour ahead, we're going to take up the question of what schools should be required to teach and what the role of the legislature should be in directing those decisions. We'll hear from both sides of the debate, as well as the new president of the State Board of Education. That's ahead on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. The days when school books just consisted of the three R's are long gone. And now California schools may soon have another addition to the social studies curriculum. This week, the State Assembly passed and sent on to the governor a bill which would require that school texts include the contributions of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender individuals to the development of California and the United States. The bill also adds the same mandate for the contributions of people with disabilities. Governor Brown has not yet indicated whether he'll sign the bill. A similar piece of legislation was vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger in 2006. The bill has been championed by a number of gay rights groups and passed on a largely party-line vote. It was fiercely opposed by most Republicans in the legislature and a number of religious organizations. This morning we're going to hear from both sides of the debate, and then a little bit later we'll also hear from Mike Kirst, who is the new president of the State Board of Education. We begin with comments from Assemblyman Tom Amiano, who was the principal co-author of the bill, Democrat, of course, of San Francisco. Assemblyman Amiano, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like you to comment on those who say, you know, this is entirely noteworthy and worthwhile and generally a good idea, but this can get to be a slippery slope if we start mandating what goes in and what goes out of school curricula. It's a task better left to educational experts rather than the legislature.
Well, I think this bill definitely, and the intent of this bill, and I want to thank Senator Mark Leno for introducing it, and then formally Senator Sheila Q, former Senator Sheila Q. I think this, the intent of this bill and what it accomplishes is not precedent setting. We, you know, it does have a home in the legislature. You know, we do have a role in not only you know, funding education, but also watchdogging. And, you know, I was a teacher for many years. And one of the things that struck me in the 60s, late 60s and early 70s, was how the kids I taught were, there wasn't a lot of teachers who looked like them in those days. And there certainly were no curriculum materials. And I'm talking about, you know, Asian American, Latino, et cetera. So yeah, curriculum, just like history, you know, it moves. It is fluid, and there's been a lot of omission, particularly in curriculum. People like to play it safe. Educational materials are big business. Sometimes we call some of the bigger companies the McDonald's because they try to homogenize and be as safe as possible, play into, you know, more Caucasian middle-class values, and that's really not mm-hmm. what is happening in the public school. So, yeah, I think we do have a right and a duty to make sure that these curriculum materials, you know, reflect the modern-day world. And also, we're catching up because there's been years and years of omission, particularly around the LGBT community. Even if you just look at civil rights, you know, the contributions that LGBT people have made to the civil rights movement, just that alone, never mind people who have made historical contributions. I mean, look, today we had the launch. If one of those astronauts is gay, then he or she.
Yeah.
You know, could be recognized.
Well, the opponents, again, would also argue that this can be a kind of slippery slope in that it will wind up, one of the principal concerns, as you know, is that it winds up maybe introducing material that might be inappropriate for kids at very young levels, that it will involve teaching about gay sexual relationships and so forth as early as the fourth grade. For parents who might have concerns about that, what would be your response?
Well, it doesn't talk about people's intimate lives. It talks about them as a member of a community that's contributed to the improvement of our society. You know, it's very frustrating for me and at the same time somewhat amusing, because what you hear is this preoccupation with sexual behavior, and that LGBT people, that's all they are sexual beings, you know, rather than looking at people holistically. You know, they have many lifestyles, not just a lifestyle. They have a life. You know, they're in every strata of society and every ethnic group, every language group, gender. And people still need to be educated around the fact that, you know, if you are gay, that doesn't mean all you do is and how you're defined is by what your sexual orientation is. And, you know, that's the slippery slope is the moving towards the enlightenment of people. And you know, we've come a long way, but we still have a way to go. And there's still a lot of institutionalized homophobia. And definitely, if history reflects truly what's been happening, and then if our school materials do too, you're not lying about it by omitting it.
Let me ask you one last thing, Assemblyman Amiano. As a former teacher, I'm interested in your response to this. We seem to always be adding to what we expect of our teachers in our public schools, at the same time subtracting resources, sometimes literally subtracting school days from the year, a problem which you're obviously also dealing with at the legislature in terms of the funding of education. How do you balance those two? In a sense, isn't this adding one more thing for teachers to do at the very time when they have perhaps the least ability and the least resource to do that?
Well, no, because, you know, teachers are very resourceful, and obviously, you know, the economics of education is primary. But, you know, we are completing, we're not adding. That's always the problem when you have been left out, whoever you are. When you start to address the issue, when you start to say we want to be included, we need to be included, then there might be a perception that that's adding, but actually that's just catching up. And, you know, most teachers I know, straight and gay, from my own experience, we're always hungry for new things. We see things that are happening on the playground or within the fabric of the school community that are not reflected. So actually, this expansion is welcome, and it's really not so much a matter of money as a matter of attitude, as a matter of inclusiveness. You know, a lot of times history is revised or omitted, and that's not telling the kids the truth. So this isn't an advocacy position by any means, but it does speak to inclusion.
And just a last quick assessment, if you would, on what you think the governor is going to do.
You know, with Jerry Brown, it's kind of like American Idol. We know in his heart and through conversations he's there. Whether he'll put the signature on the document is yet to be determined. But we are encouraged by the talks we've had with his office.
Assemblyman Tom Amiano, Democrat of San Francisco, principal co-author of this particular piece of legislation. Assemblyman, thanks very much for getting us started this morning.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you.
And joining us now is Brad Dacus. He is a constitutional attorney and president of the Pacific Justice Institute, which is a nonprofit legal defense organization specializing in the defense of religious freedom, parental rights, and other civil liberties. Mr. Dacus, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Happy to have you join us. We're also joined by Tim Donnelly, who is an assemblyman in the California State Assembly and opposed this legislation. In a moment, we'll also hear from Mario Guerrero, who is on the other side of this debate. Assemblyman Donnelly, let me start with you. I don't know if you heard any of Assemblyman Amiano's comments, but essentially the point he was making is this is just about inclusion. It's a group that has not been properly included in curriculum in the past, and this is an effort to make our social studies curriculum more inclusive. What are your principal objections to doing that?
Well, my objections are constitutional in nature, which is the government has absolutely no right to tell us what to think. You're not saying let's just include the history of the United States or the history of California, and yes, there are chapters in it. And yes, for instance, you can make a case that, you know, Harvey Milk is a political figure, therefore he has a place in history, just like Martin Luther King and a lot of other people who were political leaders who were assassinated. So there's certainly you could make a case from that point of view. But if you come in and you say here's a group of people and here is what you must think about them, and here is how you must teach it so that it is always a positive contribution and not just history. I think that's a slippery slope down to where we then will have the thought police walking around the school and saying, hey, if you're a fundamentalist Christian and this offends you, you're not allowed to speak.
I'm curious about the jump from what the law specifies, which is that the role and contributions of these individuals, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, be included, that speaks to what the bill says is to the development of California and the United States. It doesn't go beyond that. So where are you inferring that it will take us in a deeper direction?
This is the beginning. This is how it always happens. You've seen it. And by the way, I'm opposed to the inclusion, the forced government dictated inclusion of any and every group, period. So I'm consistent. I don't care if you're white. I don't care if you're black. I don't care if you're Hispanic. I don't care if you're Christian, you know, Muslim, Jew, whatever. I don't think that there should be a requirement within the textbooks to have forced inclusion of any group. I think it is a dangerous precedent, because essentially when you do that, you're going to make a choice here. And the question is, who are you going to leave out? What important figure within our history are you going to now sacrifice so that you can meet this requirement? Because the requirement is now a false requirement. It is not a requirement to say who were the most important figures in the shaping of California.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we should be looking at. Everyone's accomplishments and contributions to the forming and shaping of California should be included, regardless of their sexual orientation, regardless of all the other categories, such as religion, national origin, any of that.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're not objecting if the story about Harvey Milk being the first elected gay supervisor in San Francisco and the role he played in the history of San Francisco in the mid to late 70s is deemed of historical significance, you're saying that's perfectly appropriate to be in a textbook. You just don't want it to be a sort of a quota requirement. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think it's ridiculous to point out and say we're going to have a requirement to include the positive contributions of this group. So let's take a hypothetical. Let's take a tale of two Twin Peaks. I live in Twin Peaks. I'm in Twin Peaks right now. It's up in the San Bernardino National Forest at 6,000 feet. Up here, we would love to have a class on the Bible, and it's permissible within the education code to teach a class about the Bible. It is not permissible right now, and can you imagine the outrage in the Twin Peaks section of San Francisco if Tim Donnelly put forth a bill that said, we are going to force the teaching of the Bible to be included, and it must only be a positive inclusion of Christians, and it will be the Judeo-Christian Bible, and it will be taught as the immutable word of God, which I happen to believe. Now, if I do that, I am now forcing my religion, my viewpoint, on the entire state of California. And even though they say, well, there's some option for local school boards to come up with this, that, and the other, this stuff never works out that way. It always, once you dictate and legislate, it becomes a requirement, and then it's just a matter of how they figure out how to do it. And the freedom of thought, the freedom of speech of every individual in California has now been put at risk. And I think that's something that is a far greater importance than trying to push an agenda from any group.
State Representative Tim Donnelly, who represents San Bernardino County in the State Assembly and was opposed to the piece of legislation that was passed by the Assembly this week. Representative Donnelly, thanks very much for adding to our conversation today.
Thank you for having me on.
Let's invite in the rest of our contributors to our discussion this morning. I mentioned Brad Dacus, constitutional attorney and president of the Pacific Justice Institute. Mr. Dacus, again, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, great. It's great to be on the program. Thanks.
Mario Guerrero joins us as well. He is Government Affairs Director of Equality California. That's a statewide lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and civil rights advocacy organization. Mr. Guerrero, thanks for being with us, too.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Mike Kirst joins us as well. He's president of the California State Board of Education, professor emeritus of education at Stanford University. Mike Kirst, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you.
Well, let's dig into this. We've heard arguments from both sides. Let's round this out a bit for. And Mike, maybe, Mike Kirst, maybe you can start us out, because we're hearing a lot of conversation about sort of what might be inserted into the school curriculum and into particular textbooks. What's the process for that? I mean, now, if the governor signs this bill, as Tom Amiano hopes, what gets put into the curriculum, or is there sort of a long process that would be gone through before something would actually find its way into the classroom?
Well, it would be a long process, and I want to say from the outset that this bill adds to many other specifications that the legislature has done over the years. I mean, in the education code in the past have been the contents of first aid kits and all sorts of things. So the legislature has a history of specifying things, and they have the right to do this, that must be in the curriculum. Already, this bill amends prior mentions that we must include instruction in the social sciences concerning the role and contributions of Native Americans, African Americans, Mexican Americans, Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, European Americans. So this bill would add lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Americans, and also persons with disabilities. So it is adding on to a process that has taken place in the past. Then it would also say that the local districts must adopt instructional materials that concretely and accurately portray the role and contributions of these different kinds of people. And it would prohibit instruction or adoption of books that reflects adversely on particular groups, and it would add to the groups I gave before, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and persons with disability. So this is a process that will take a while. One has to revise, first of all, the curriculum framework in social studies to say what would be appropriate, that coverage for this. That would be the role of the State Board of Education. Then one would have to get criteria out to the publishers to say, when you submit books for social studies and history and so on, you must include this group. And then the board would have to adopt it. Right now, we have a moratorium on adoptions because of the costs and the budget problems, so it would take even longer. Finally, this issue is, at the end would be up to teachers in local districts as to whether they actually included this in their instruction. These things are notoriously hard to enforce in that, you know, how do you get behind a classroom door and find out what they're teaching day to day? So typically the board acts on complaints from local citizens saying they're not following the law, they're not including these particular groups. So that's an issue there, and we could also adopt supplementary materials in addition to basic textbooks, and that would include this. And finally, we could do online adoption of things as well, because we're moving well beyond the conventional heavy textbook in the future.
So clearly there's a long, long road between even when or if the governor signs this particular bill and what would wind up in a particular classroom. I want to hear more about that and the kinds of steps that are involved as we proceed. But I want to come back now to Brad Dacus at the Pacific Justice Institute, because when you hear that explanation from Mike Kirst, the president of the California State Board of Education, I would think that would allay some particular concerns that you might have about what's suddenly going to appear in a fourth grade classroom.
Well, first off, I just wanted to say that I don't think it does. And the reason is because when we look at the actual language of the bill, there is no time frame saying it has to be, it's not enforced from 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. No, it's actually, it says instruction in social sciences shall include, the early history of California. I mean, it is an instant mandate, an instant obligation to public school districts. There is no opt-out provision in this legislation. I have it right here in front of me, and it's not there. So as far as the long, long road, no, this will open the door for immediate advocacy from teachers who wish to highlight these different groups. And also, we're not talking about bullying or harassment. I want to make that really clear. This is not about, trying to adopt a policy against harassment of children or bullying of children. Oh, no, we already have legislation dealing with this. This is an advocacy piece of legislation to promote, irrespective of the age of the child, to promote role models in history because of their sexual orientation, and not because of their inherent contributions. And I think that, that's another problem we see with this. If we're going to preserve the integrity and the objectivity of education and history, that should be the goal of all of us. And I'm sure Mike would agree with this. We need to make sure that education is based on facts, not based on speculation. Inherently, educators are going to be speculating as to the sexual orientation of people throughout history. Second, it needs to be objective, not biased. This legislation on its face says nothing negative. Article amends 50 section 50, section 2 of 51500, saying that you can have nothing adverse, nothing just no discriminatory bias in any way with regards to sexual orientation in this regard. So,
well, let me get some reaction now from Mario Guerrero, again, Government Affairs Director for Equality California, which is a civil rights advocacy organization, on the principal point I think you're making. And what about that, Mario Guerrero, that this opens the door to sort of promoting certain people as role models based only on their identification with a particular group as opposed to sort of their broader historical significance?
Well, again, thank you for having me. And I've heard the opposition comments. And for, as many times as they have mentioned that we should read the bill, I would have to say to them that they should read the bill. I'm going to read you a specific quote from the bill at this time as it's been enrolled to the governor. Public schools that contain any matter reflecting adversely upon persons. Now, this is the key. On the basis of. And then it enumerates protected categories. So it's not just it's not that we are pushing that LGBT people be reflected of positively. We're just saying that you cannot discriminate on the basis of. And again, there's an enumerated categories, including ethnicity, gender, religion, I might add, and we're simply adding sexual orientation.
So you could say something that was completely negative or comment about someone's deeds that were not at all something that were admirable. You just couldn't do that because of their membership to a particular group, correct?
Exactly.
Mario Guerrero joining us, Government Affairs Director for Equality California. We'll hear more from him, as well as Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute and Mike Kirst, President of the California State Board of Education, when we return. We have to take a short break. We'd welcome your calls on this subject. What do you think about the value of mandating certain provisions for what ought to be taught within the social studies curriculum? How do you feel about this particular edition that the contributions of people who are from the gay, lesbian, bisexual or transgender community, that their contributions be included? Join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, a bill passed by the State Assembly this week, now on its way to the desk of Governor Jerry Brown, which would mandate the inclusion of the contributions of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people to the teaching of our social studies curriculum. We heard earlier from two state assemblymen, Tom Amiano and Tim Donnelly, on differing sides of this debate. Joining us for the rest of our hour, Brad Dacus, who is a constitutional attorney and president of the Pacific Justice Institute. He opposes the legislation. Mario Guerrero, government affairs director from Equality California, support of it. And Mike Kirst, the president of the California State Board of Education. We welcome your calls, too, at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Brad Dacus, on the point that Mario Guerrero was making just before the break, again, if you do look at the legislation, what it says is the state board cannot adopt any instructional materials that contain matter reflecting adversely on the basis of. So it doesn't say you have to be positive. It's just that you can't have stuff in the curriculum that is negative purely on the basis of membership of a particular group. That's an important distinction, is it not?
It is, and I'm glad. I think it's a relevant point, too. Let me take two problems I see with this. So first is, for example, how the person passes away. If this person passes away from diseases that are associated or affiliated with their sexual behavior as a result of their sexual orientation, which are inherent in their sexual orientation, perhaps, that are resulting from that, that would have to be excluded. And so, and then in addition, and this is even more important, I think, and many people don't even get this, and that is, it says also the school district shall not sponsor any activity that promotes a discriminatory bias on the basis of, and has a whole list of things, including adding sexual orientation. Now, the problem here, as we see, is that student clubs are sponsored by the school. The activities of student clubs are inherently sponsored by the school. Therefore, a religious club, a Christian club, an Orthodox Jewish club, whatever, would not be allowed to bring in, say, an ex-homosexual. There's over 10,000 members of Exodus International, ex-homosexuals, would not be allowed to bring in one to share their testimony or talk about what they've been through. It actually closes the door for two-way conversation and discussion, not just in the classroom, but also with regards to student clubs and activities. And I don't think that's an accident.
Let's bring back Mike Kirst into our conversation again, new president of the California State Board of Education, professor emeritus of education at Stanford University. Mike Kirst, so how do you contend with this interpretation of this question? We're seeing that in the legislation it says that you cannot contain any matter that reflects adversely on the basis of. You've heard Mr. Dacus make the argument that means you couldn't say that someone died of AIDS. How do you sort out that? What's the process for sort of figuring out what's allowable and what's not?
Yeah, this is part of the regulation process where the state would be asked to promulgate regulations after the law is passed. Typically, laws are rather, they don't anticipate every single case and instance. So I think in this case, Mr. Dacus is speculating about what might be the outlines of regulations and requirements that local districts would have. I'm sure if, you know, either of his examples, like people couldn't, the clubs and who they could admit and so on, all of that we would hear about at the state level, and people would ask us to promulgate regulations to define what reflect adversely upon persons means. That has a variety of meanings, and typically that is then defined through regulation.
Mike, I'm interested in your view on this as an education professional, someone who has worked and taught in this arena for many, many years before putting back on the hat of president of the State Board of Education, a role you once had many years ago as well. I mean, is there part of you that just feels like, go away, legislature. Let us in education figure these things out instead of continuing to add in all of these things that we have to contend with?
Well, it's really such a hypothetical question. I don't think about it much because the legislature controls the purse strings. It has authority to intervene under the legal basis of California in the details of California education. It has done this. We have a gigantic education code that has specificity in it. So it's just part of their constitutional right to do this. But you do raise the question of when does this get excessive and what is the balance and what do you have to give up to add new things in. In this case, I don't think it's a terrific overwhelming burden, but we've had things taken out like driver education. That's much less prevalent in the school system than it was years ago. So there has been some balancing back and forth.
Mike Kirst, again, the president of the California State Board of Education, joining us along with Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute and Mario Guerrero. Government Affairs Directors for Equality California. Let's go ahead and take our first caller. Brian in Woodside joins us next. Brian, go ahead, please.
Good morning. I just wanted to say, you know, as an African-American and as a gay man, you know, growing up, I'm in my 40s, growing up, there was not a lot of information about African-American accomplishments in our books. And, you know, I grew up in a mostly white neighborhood. And, you know, not until I was an adult did I actually get, you know, information about how much, you know, African-Americans were entrepreneurs and a whole list of, you know, wonderful things. And, you know, why? Somebody obviously felt it wasn't important. So I kind of feel it's the same way with this, you know, with leaving out the, you know, the history of the gay and lesbian bisexual community. It's somehow that somebody thinks it's not important. Maybe it's not important to you, but it could be very important to, you know, the growth of our students.
Brian, thanks. Thanks for adding that point of view. You want to respond to that, Brad Dacus?
Yeah, I would. And I just want to say first, it's, I understand where he's coming from in that regard. In our history, we've had a terrible history in our nation of based on discrimination, keeping out people and not including them because of their race, for example. And I would frankly support legislation that said that no historical figures' contributions shall be excluded because of their sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, et cetera. I mean, that is dealing and addressing with what he just talked about. But when we deal with sexual orientation, we have two other issues, though, that are very distinguished with regard to race. And I think minorities out there would appreciate these points. First is that race is very defined and very understood factually. Sexual orientation is very speculative, extremely speculative. And in fact, could be have a whiplash on the relatives and descendants of those who would think differently. Some saying, for example, Abraham Lincoln was supposedly homosexual, or some even say Jesus was a homosexual. Many would disagree with that, and at the very least call it speculative. And then second is the serious issue of age appropriateness and sensitivity to the rights of parents. We in California have a wide diversity of parents with different beliefs and perspectives as to what is or is not really acceptable and right and appropriate for their children.
Well,
and
let's
legislation crams those different, certain one-way viewpoint of values that is totally intolerant and insensitive to this wide diversity of parents throughout the state of California.
Yeah, let's hear from Mario Guerrero on this point again, because we come back to this often, that this is going to push a particular point of view to parents who might not necessarily want their child to hear it. Mr. Guerrero?
Sure. Thank you again. And I just want to point out, we're actually the sponsor, one of the sponsors of the bill, because we believe in this idea. I will respond in the following manner. Parents can't opt out their children from learning about the women's suffrage movement. They can't, you know, opt out their kids from learning about Martin Luther King Jr. or Cesar Chavez or any number of important historical figures, events. And this is exactly along those lines. They should not and ought not to be able to opt out their children from learning about the contributions, the history of LGBT people. That's just not there. And I think part of the question that comes up is this context of religion, that parents might have religious objections. And that's an important point. But here again, there is no one religion in this country. There is no one group that whose ideology we use to exclude important facts from a curriculum. We just don't do that here.
And back to our calls. Let's hear what Nick has to say next. He joins us from San Francisco. Nick, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering about how the educators are expected to include the reference to LGBT as a factor in the individual's historical contributions for if their activities are not related to, say, gay rights or LGBT rights. It seems kind of orthogonal or potentially irrelevant. As if, you know, for example, if one of the astronauts in the space shuttle was LGBT and their accomplishments are great, but why would it would seem potentially not relevant to call it, oh, and by the way, they're LGBT, or let's say they're left-handed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, interesting point, Nick. Thank you. Tom Amiano, Assemblyman Amiano, actually made that same shuttle reference this morning, since, of course, there was the launch today, and that if it so happened that one of the people aboard the launch were gay, that would be worth referencing. You're making the point that it's essentially irrelevant. Again, my curse at the State Board of Education, how do you sort through that sort of question about whether or not that sort of attribute is relevant to someone's historical contributions?
Right. Well, let me make a distinction between state policy and local policy, because Brad Dacus was right that local districts can move on this legislation requiring instruction in social sciences in more quickly than the state can, because local districts can adopt materials as long as they don't use state funds for them that are not approved by the State Board of Education. And there's even some waivers now that they can waive some of the state requirements. So this would be, some of this would be decided locality by locality. On the other hand, any state in California is one of a minority of states that adopt statewide materials, instructional materials, textbooks, supplementary materials, online materials, and so on. And in that regard, the board would set up some criteria telling various producers of instructional materials how this new legislation should be interpreted and implemented. And then they would submit materials to us, if you're using textbooks, with this in it. I went through this before in the 70s on the board. If you take the issue of gender, which is also in this legislation, prior legislation, and this adds to it, we had to figure out, well, how would you portray gender? When I got on the board, all the books, the pictures of women were almost all in the home, particularly in the kitchen, for example. And so if you looked rather quickly, then within the next 5 to 10 years, we saw females in a variety of roles. The publishers did respond to the state criteria. So there's a state policy track, and that's a slower track. And then there's a local policy track. That potentially could be quicker because the local districts would spend their own money to implement this.
Mike Kirst, president of the once and future, I guess, president of the California State Board of Education, did that duty back in the late 70s and for some reason was willing to do it again this time. Email comes in, also a question for Mike Kirst. This individual writes, I decided to end my time as a history teacher in California because of the increasing requirements that state standards have put on what should be taught as history as opposed to processes to evaluate historical events. I'm wondering if this interesting dialogue isn't an opportunity to discuss why we use schools as a place to impose cultural values as opposed to a place to institutionalize and test the process of critical reflection. Again, it gets back to what we were talking about earlier, Mike Kirst, about the burden in many ways that teachers now have.
Yes, well, I think this goes to the essential function of public schools. Why do we have public schools in this country historically? Other countries merely distribute money, like Belgium and the Netherlands, to a set of private schools in many cases. And our view was that we should have public schools to transmit a common culture through our common public schools. And I think that's the basis of which we, a lot of this, over 100 and more years, more than 100 years, has come into the schools. And so as times change, people's views of what the common culture is and what we ought to be transmitting as a common basis for all students has changed, and it has increased as the developments have gone on. And so the caller is right. There has been an increase in content coverage around the common culture and all the historical events. And there's been less time spent sort of looking at historical documents and interpreting them from different purposes and different viewpoints. What is history? As we all know, it varies depending on how you look at it in some cases. So we need to get a better balance on this over time, and I think there are new curriculum standards coming out that I think will do something about this in the next decade.
Again, Mike Kirst, he's president of the California State Board of Education. A different Mike emails in this point. You cannot have it both ways. If you want these folks in the textbooks because of their sexual habits, then you cannot at the same time maintain that that is not the reason they're in the books. If the people these legislators want included are significant figures for other reasons, then I say by all means include them. However, who they sleep with is not a factor in qualifying them for recognition. Mario Guerrero, would you agree with that, that this is really about what someone does, not about who he goes to bed with?
No, I would not. You know, I keep hearing this issue being brought up, but I will say as a Latino American that being Latino impacted my life to the core. It has shaped every facet of my life. So has my sexual orientation, which is not a choice. It is an orientation. I was born this way. And so that has had an impact on everything that I have done. Similar to important people that have done, contributed to our society, their sexual orientation is core to who they are, and in many cases has played a key role in their accomplishments. For example, Bayard Rustin, who played a critical role in the African-American civil rights movement, we know that he was ostracized within the civil rights movement because he was gay. That is an important aspect of the civil rights struggle that needs to be included. There are so many other events, individuals that highlight the importance, the intrinsic importance that sexual orientation has played in our society. We need to include it for those reasons.
Mario Guerrero again, Government Affairs Director, Equality California. Let's hear from more of our listeners. Jennifer joins us next in San Mateo. Jennifer?
Hi. I first want to say that I also grew up in San Bernardino in Twin Peaks, and I'm kind of sorry to hear that we have now produced a representative with the views that Mr. Donnelly has. This type of conversation I find really infuriating to listen to because of the historical structures around a power around what is considered important, around what is interpreted to be relevant to history and that our children should be taught. When you hear men who are typically men, white, Christian, powerful men making this argument that the only thing that should be included are issues that are of substance. Well, they cannot see the substance. They are like fish in the water that cannot see the water. We swim in the waters of white male privilege, and the other currents within those waters, like the currents of the Latino population, currents that women have provided, currents that any other historically oppressed or subjugated population has contributed to, are just not seen by these other folks.
Jennifer, thanks. Thanks for putting forward your thoughts. And I'm going to ask Brad Dacus to respond.
Oh, I appreciate that. First off, I want to just make a point regarding the earlier comment. Kaiser Permanente themselves have come out in their material and said that sexual orientation is something that's very fluid up to the age and possibly beyond the age of 25. So I don't want any. I think that issue alone that is arguable and debatable. To say that cannot be brought in, that only one perspective, that you're born that way, should be allowed to be in the classroom, and that's basically what's often inferred by this, I believe, by this legislation, I think can be very serious. Secondly, the comment of the other lady who just talked to, I think it's a classic example of one-way tolerance. For her to stereotype Christians and people who are people based on their race or their gender, the way she just did, as being closed-minded, only looking one way when thinking, I think is very unfortunate.
Well, if I could interject...
Excuse me, I'm going to answer this, because that was a very strong and offensive stereotype and generalization that I find deplorable for this kind of a program, first off. But if we're going to look at history, it needs to be objective and to imply that people, because of their race or their religion, do not have the ability to promote objective, relevant non-speculative history and instruction, I think is an offense, and I think it's an offense to many of your listeners.
I hear you, Mr. Dacus. The point I wanted to raise with you and ask you to respond to is what I heard Jennifer say, at least in part, is that history for a long time has been determined by one particular subset of our population, referencing obviously whites and males. And we heard Mike Kirst say that when he came on the State Board of Education in the 70s, that all of the pictures and textbooks of women were women in the home. So the point is simply that times change, and we need to be reflective of that change. That's part of what at least I heard Jennifer say. You wouldn't disagree with that part, would you?
Oh, no. No, I think that's true. And women and their role in history has changed dramatically from being predominantly in the home to being successful in business as well as being successful in the home. Now, I think that's very true. But also when we talk about common culture, that phrase, quote-unquote, common culture, we need to teach common culture. I think that is a contrary, though, to the objective of education, which is to treat objective knowledge and promote critical thinking.
Well,
unless you have openness to viewpoint and values and perspectives, not just isolate it to one perspective, which is what this legislation does, then we really don't have quality education. Instead, we have forced homogenization and forced indoctrination. And I think that's the slippery slope that is we've seen as a reality. For example, in Redwood Heights Elementary in Oakland School District, where they brought in the full-blown cross-dresser sensitivity program to the kindergarten level, telling boys that they could be a boy on the outside but a girl on the inside. That is verbatim from their material. That is a classic example of the kind of thing that we're opening the door for when we look at this legislation.
Well, I wanted to get to another call, but you've thrown a lot out there that I in fairness, should have let Mario Guerrero respond to. Go ahead, Mr. Guerrero.
That. Sure. Well, first I would like to add, you know, I keep hearing we brush over these great civil rights movements. Like, we woke up one day and all of a sudden women were portrayed appropriately in, you know, outside of the home. They were, you know, they were portrayed as workers, as folks that have accomplished things in sciences, et cetera. That didn't happen overnight. There was a whole movement to get us there. Same thing with African Americans, Latino Americans, same with LGBT Americans. This is our civil rights struggle, and we're saying we are similarly important. We should be included. It doesn't happen overnight, but that's why we're putting this forward.
And to Lindsay, who joins us next in San Jose. Lindsay, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a history teacher here in San Jose, and I actually chose to teach in private schools because of legislation like this. I teach because I think history can change the world, just for the exact reason why people are trying to pass this legislation. But this legislation makes it impossible for me to do my job because I have to teach this person and this person and this person, and I don't have time to teach my discipline. And the kids lose all sense of chronology, and so they don't even understand why these people are important because I don't have time, because I'm restricted by legislation, to teach them the why. And that is why I would vehemently oppose this legislation. It's killing my profession.
Lindsay, thank you. Mike Kirst, though Lindsay teaches in a private school, maybe you can respond to that. Again, we're coming back once again to this question of what teachers have to teach. Don't teachers, though, in the end, still have a fair amount of autonomy? As you said, no one's necessarily listening at the classroom door.
Yeah, that's right. All of this relies on, in the end, in California, we have over 300,000 public school teachers. So they're the actually ones presenting the material. School boards can adopt policies, but even at the local level, but even they have difficulty enforcing some of the more detailed things. We have provided incentives through putting items on state and local assessments tests that would check up on whether these things are being taught. So that would be one way of making the teachers cover it. But overall, it's a pretty loose system. But if teachers do teach from standardized curriculum materials that the state adopts, then there would be a little bit more structure to what they do, and that would then come into my bailiwick on the State Board of Education on what that would look like. Private schools in California are not regulated much at all. We have a highly regulated public sector, and among the 50 states, a relatively low-regulated private sector. So the person's call about discretion there is on point.
One last quote I want to read you. This is actually from the historian David McCullough, who said recently, history is often taught in categories, women's history, African-American history, environmental history, so that many of the students have no sense of chronology. They have no idea of what necessarily followed what. He was making a point about being concerned about this general topic, in a sense. And I just want to use that as a sort of way to get at some last thoughts on that this question. Mario Guerrero, on the concern that if we divvy things up too much with this requirement and that requirement, that we don't give our students a broader sense of the sort of whole. Respond, if you would, please.
Sure. I think what we're seeing is frustration in general with our educational system, the quality and the funding. But I think we're conflating that with this bill and what it's trying to do. Sure, it adds a requirement, but, you know, What I hear in opposition to this bill is cost, is that people aren't happy with it based on religious reasons or any other reasons. And, you know, these are the same exact reasons for opposition that we heard when we included women, when we had to work to include women in social instruction, in African Americans, Latinos, I mean, on and on. So this is nothing new.
And let me hold you there, if I might, because we just have about 20 seconds, and I want to give Mr. Dacus a last quick word.
Yeah. Once again, I we need to recognize there's nothing immoral or morally controversial about someone's race or their gender. Never has been, never will be. It's to ignore the fact that there are people with different perspectives morally, ethically, and yes, even religiously on this, and to shrug that aside as insignificant and not to be respected, I think is an insult to the whole concept of civil rights and true civil liberties. And I hope that the people express their viewpoint to Governor Brown. This is not an issue of this is not to promote education. This is to promote indoctrination. One way viewpoint is not tolerance; it's tyranny.
And we have to hold it there. Other than to say to Mike Kirst, the president of the State Board of Education, good luck, Mike.
Hey, thank you.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Lorberg. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. Danny Bringer is our engineer. Thanks to all of our guests as well for participating in our program today. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.